Hey, welcome to a Team Doc Lures members only audio masterclass where we delve a little bit deeper into some of the nuts and bolts of fishing that can help you to improve your fishing and certainly improve your enjoyment of fishing. And while I'm happy to talk to any of our Team Doc Lures contributors, these masterclasses are your opportunity to get your questions answered too. So zap over to team.doclures.com and post questions for any of our contributors, and we'll try and make sure that those questions get answered the very next time we put together a masterclass. That way, you're part of the conversation and your questions are getting answered too, which of course is the entire goal of the Team Doc Lures community. So go and check that out, team.doclures.com. But for now, folks, let's get today's contributor on the line and let's squeeze out some tips that are going to help you and I improve our fishing out of sight. Well, folks, some time ago, I had a bit of a chat with Scotto down in Tassie from Messiah Rods. I'm sure a lot of you listened to that episode. I got a lot of very positive feedback. We talked about brim fishing, and he's got some very, very different approaches that were really refreshing and really educational, and certainly inspired a lot of people to look at brim fishing a little bit differently. So over the last few weeks or months, I've been keeping a bit of an eye on Scotto's Facebook and on the brim groups that he posts on Facebook. And he's been doing a fair bit of experimentation with leaders. And I thought, you know, this is a really good topic to have Scotto come and talk about for the Team Doc Lures guys and help all of us, myself included, to come to a bit more of an understanding about the different options when it comes to leaders. Because people frequently just go for the fluorocarbon. That seems to be the in thing at the moment. But there are some other options. There are some other materials you can use for leaders, and they have their advantages as well. So Scotto, great to have you back on the show, mate. Thank you for coming along and sharing with us your wisdom and your experimentation that you've been doing over the last few months, probably a bit longer to be honest, but certainly I've seen it over the last few months on Facebook. Great to have you back, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Greg, and a pleasure. I'm sure it's about 25 degrees warmer in Cairns than it is in the East Coast Highlands at the moment. I'm very envious, mate.
Yeah, mate, and we're envious of you sitting in front of a fire down there and you're having a quiet snort of whiskey or something out there in the cool weather. So it's, as you said before we hit the record button, doesn't matter which end of the country you're at, you always envy the people at the other end of the country. But I tell you what, it is a lovely place down in Tassie. I've spent a lot of time down there, lived in Hobart for 6 years, and didn't see enough of the state. Still would like to get back down there from time to time and have a bit more of a roam around, a bit more exploring. But, mate, it is a great part of the world, and you're sitting outside at the moment. You live in a place where the reception's not that great on the mobile, so you're sitting outside, rugged up. We appreciate the effort that you've gone to, mate, to have a chat with us tonight. So before we do that, though, let's have a little bit of a chat about what's going on in terms of the fishing down in your part of the world over the next few months. So when this goes live, it's going to be sort of mid-October-ish, and things start to warm up down in Tassie over that period. Well, they warm up all over Australia at that time of year, but the fishing starts to warm up, doesn't it? The trout start to come on the chew, you know, the season's open again, the water's warming, the snow melt's happening, all that kind of stuff. It's a great time of year to be fishing for trout. The brim are starting to warm up as well. They start to shake off the cold. I know you've been absolutely creaming some big brim down there. Tell us a bit about, yeah, what's on offer over the next few months, mate.
Unfortunately, for your listeners, I've probably got some pretty bad news in regards to our brim fishery. We've had the last 2 years, after coming out of considerable drought, we've had some very wet years, and this is now our 12th flood event that's underway in 2 years. We've had either limited or zero recruitment of brim the 2 years previous to now, and that the spawn sort of begins about when the wattle starts to appear, so around that sort of September area they start to aggregate towards the freshwater confluences of a lot of East Coast systems.
Yeah.
And although the catchments are relatively small, when we get floods here, they're not slow floods. They're almost horizontal waterfalls because they're coming off very steep country. So we had those brim that you've been looking at in those pictures. They were probably two and a half weeks ago. We had a massive wipeout flood, and then less than 2 weeks later, another one. And pretty much, if we get almost, if it rains more than it is now, if it continues to rain, even spasmodically between Christmas, the likelihood is three consecutive years with no recruitment in many systems on the East Coast, which for those of us that love our brim is absolutely tragic.
That's grim, yeah. Because, of course, you know, this is a species that needs that brackish water to spawn in. If you get big floods like that come through in those flashy little catchments that you're fishing in, that flushes all of the salt out. There's no chance for the fish then to spawn. And it takes 6 or 7 years for a black brim to get to legal size, let alone trophy fish size. So 3 years of very little recruitment or no recruitment at all, that's not a good scenario.
No, no, it is sad. And with those sort of torrents of water, the plankton, which is essential for baby brim and adult brim, I think the science is very strong that there's a direct correlation between plankton and brim spawning. Brim understand when there's plankton there, they drop their spawn on or around dark for about an hour. It's not a process that goes on all day, but it is a process that goes on for you know, 3 months, 4 months, perhaps more in a good year. And that plankton has, it takes probably a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks, and that includes some favourable conditions and some very big tides to push that plankton back up towards those areas where they spawn. So even though the brim might get up there themselves and be holding spawn, they're not going to drop it when there's no tucker for the little brim.
Yep, it'd be a waste of a precious resource. So yeah, it's a bit like kangaroos withholding their joeys until the conditions are right to bear joeys. Yeah, fish can do the same thing. So, yeah, okay, well, I wasn't aware that the floods had hit that hard. I knew that there'd been some flooding there, but wasn't aware that it had been that severe over the last couple of weeks. So not great news, but, mate, let's focus on something a little bit more positive, the trout fishing. What's happening there?
It's been a bit hit and miss as well, although that would be very dependent on where you're fishing. So I'm only sort of 200 metres from Lake Leake. It's why we bought our home here. For those that don't know Lake Leake, we're at about 600 metres in the East Coast Highlands. As a crow flies, 40 or 50 k's from the Central Highlands, so Lake Leake in a westerly is, or in a southwesterly, is one of the coldest parts of Tasmania, and we certainly get colder than the Highlands at times. We get snow here, and we've had nothing in regards to a spring so far. The water temperatures, I was actually out yesterday, started at about 8. Because the water's quite dirty, you know, dirty water seems to absorb heat better than very clear water. That would only be an anecdotal type of observation. But yesterday, starting out at around 8, and I found patches at 15.5 by the end of the day, and the top temperature yesterday was 13. So a trout's day, so to speak, can evolve from not feeding through to feeding through to windows through to the 27 wind changes that you'll get on any given day in this part of Tasmania, most parts of Tasmania. It is fickle. So it's fishing, the eastern lakes are fishing well, but they're fishing patchy.
Okay. So all in all, tough times in Tassie for a brim or trout fisher.
I think some of the lowland fisheries are fishing very well. There's some great hatches happening. And there were good hatches happening in the low country at the very beginning of the season. But we have had some days here where there's been hatches. We do have some early mayflies this year, which is terrific. And some of the locals are fishing with duns. Other ones like me yesterday, when I didn't see a fish rise for the entire day, I ended up right up the back of the lake in the strathoid, just flogging wets in between holes in the flat and the strathoid, which was quite effective. There's a sort of a fly trouting legend that I've just met, a gentleman called Jim Ellenberger, who is just the craziest, nicest man, and he's tied me up some custom flies, and I was able to christen those on some nice rainbows yesterday. But the biggest fish yesterday came on plastic, and I haven't used plastic for ages, but I couldn't pull hits on hards. Yeah, plastic did the job, and that was plastics on braid, PE 0.5 straight through.
Yeah, and that's exactly one of the things that we're going to have a chat about a bit later on is fishing braid straight through. So glad you mentioned that. Hey, mate, Before we get into talking about leaders, I know we had a bit of a chat off air, as I usually do with my guests, and you said, oh, I wish you'd ask me that question again about who would I like to spend a day fishing with. Now, given the conditions are pretty tough in Tassie fishing at the moment anyway, I am going to ask you that question again. So, mate, who would you like to go out for a fish with? If you could spend a day out in the water with absolutely anybody, who would that person be?
Okay, so that the first time you asked that question, I went straight to Rod Harrison. And
yep.
Rod remains an absolute legend and perhaps the best thinking mind that we've seen. Some people might defer to McChrystal on that, but for me, Rod has changed my fishing because he's enabled me to sort of think in different ways. So Rod was enormous. But moving down to Tasmania has been I've been here 11 years now, but it's still quite a culture shock. And in Queensland, where I was for sort of 30 years, that's more of a rum type of scenario. And down here is more of a single malt scotch type scenario. So through my readings, I've come across, obviously I always knew of Zane Grey from certainly in my teens, but I picked up a piece. It might even have come out of the legendary publication, The Scream of the Reel. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that because I could be wrong. But Clark Gable and Zane Grey, fishing steelhead, dropping two bottles of scotch each. And I'm thinking of the conversations that those two people could have. Now, I'm not even sure I want to be fishing with those two guys, but I want to be in that boat.
Just a fly on the wall listening to the conversation.
Oh, yeah. I really couldn't think of too many better people to be on the water with. Obviously, they're both not with us, but passionate steelhead fishers and apparently quite passionate about their taste in single malt.
Now, mate, I think if you were to even indulge in just listening to that conversation, you would have to partake in the single malt as well, because in my experience is that unless you are at a similar level of inebriation to others in the room, nothing they say is going to make sense. So just brace yourself that if you ever do manage to bring those two gentlemen back for a conversation, you're going to have to keep up with them drink for drink, mate.
I have to keep up with them drink for drink.
Yeah. Yep.
They're going to have an interesting morning when they get up, aren't they?
As Alf Garnett said, I feel sorry for people who don't drink because they get up in the morning and that's the best they're going to feel all day.
Oh, isn't it a shame that we live in a PC time when, I won't call Alf Garnett a gentleman, but people like that at least can't open their mouths and make us laugh.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, mate, look, I really honestly think if you could listen to that conversation with Zane and Clark, you would have to be at the same level of inebriation or it would make no sense to you at all. So I'm just putting that out there. You need to brace yourself.
Well, if they suggested that I should be, I could probably take one for the team.
Yeah, it'd be rude not to, really.
Be very rude, Greg.
Yeah, yeah. All right, mate, let's move on and have a chat about leaders. Because as I said a minute ago, yeah, a lot of people, when they're fishing with braid, yeah, they're going to reach straight away for the fluorocarbon without thinking about it. I know, you know, most of the guests that I interview on the podcast, most of them will say, I use a fluorocarbon leader, and there's nothing more to it than that. Occasionally someone will say, you know, I use a mono leader. I think, mate, and I've done 400, as of today, 435 episodes of the podcast so far, I think you're the only one to mention copolymer leaders. And in this conversation, we're going to talk about braided leaders, and I don't think anybody has ever mentioned those on the podcast. So really looking forward to that conversation. So let's just run through those leader options, mate, and maybe compare and contrast. What are the pros and cons of each? Why do people gravitate towards fluorocarbon, do you think? Is it just a marketing thing?
Look, it's a great question, and I've tried to wrap my head around it for a long time. I think it's more than marketing, although no doubt its roots lie in marketing. I think fluorocarbon has become a belief system.
Mm.
So to draw an analogy, if you were to talk to a Christian and they were to talk about heaven and you were to suggest that the galaxy is growing exponentially at the speed of light and whereabouts is heaven, they just have a belief system and they'll default to that. And I think we probably have a generation, maybe two, that initially picked up fluorocarbon because the marketing said it was invisible.
Mm.
And yep. I think it's been extremely hard to shake that, despite the fact that it's not true. Nearly invisible, I'm okay to go with that. You know, nearly invisible, it's like nearly going to the pub, nearly going to the footy, nearly doing a whole bunch of things. But
nearly having that single malt.
Oh, no, I'm having that now.
Good idea.
I think it's become part of what people think must be used. I think a lot of people don't even consider that there's an option from fluorocarbon. So many years ago, there was a couple of articles, and they were about some, I'm not sure if they were Bassmasters in the US, but they were certainly household names. And when fluoro first came out, you know, they were $1 million contracts, and a couple of them recanted. One of the gentlemen had already used some of his $1 million, but he gave the rest back. And that really, really got me thinking. So not long after that, myself and my stepson, we went down to the Noosa River. We had fluorocarbon and we had mono. And at that point, fluorocarbon was a little bit thinner than the standard mono. And over a whiteboard in about 2 foot of visibility, which was pretty poor, we put it under the water. We could see both of them. They both threw shadows onto the whiteboard. We photographed it, and that was me pretty much done with fluoro. And at about the same time, there were lines starting to appear. I'm not sure they were necessarily called copolymer at that point, but lines started to appear that were considerably stronger than mono and considerably stronger than fluoro for the diameter. So that opened up the Pandora's box, if you like, in regards to copolymer. So perhaps other people had experimented with copolymer or used it or promoted it before I did. I don't know. But I guess because my background in doing a literal test to prove that fluorocarbon through shadow, and I mean, when it first came out, some of it was very dear, Greg. We're looking at $1 a metre for some of it, and it just didn't make sense. And then to find a material between 50 and 100% stronger seemed a revelation. Yet today on social, there's great fishermen using fluoro. There's great fishermen posting, I had a great day today, we got 20 fish, but unfortunately, you know, the two or three big ones that I hooked scorched me on 3 pound. And the information in regards to copolymer is out there. I'm sure these people have read that there are advantages, that copolymer doesn't affect takes, that it's 50 to 100% stronger, as mentioned, yet they still continue to be using 3 pound when they could be using a 6 pound with a smaller diameter. So that was the move to copolymer, and then there's been a further move to thinner and stronger materials in braid, which has absolutely blown me away. It started out as experimentation in my mind, and again, over medicinal scotch, because I'm sick all of the time. You've got to understand that. So it was, are fishing lines really just fishing lines? Is there a point where diameter is so small that it doesn't cast a shadow that's discernible to a fish? Are there colours that we've been told have to be separated by a leader, but those same colours are the colours that attract fish to lures? There was just a million questions. So within that, the trial and error started with braided leaders, and at about the same time, the technology also moved forward quite rapidly to a point where we went through a long time where an 8-strand was basically PE 0.6. And within a relatively short amount of time, a bunch of the major brands have now been able to bring out 8-strands. There's a new one coming out, 8-strand at 0.2, which is 0.07 of a mil. The leader I'm using at the moment is 0.09 of a mil. So that's a PE 0.3. And I'm tying that onto a braided mainline. So the prospects we're looking at, and bearing in mind that there are very skinny 8-strands coming out in braid and they're clear. Now, I wouldn't think the manufacturers are looking at those as leader prospects. I think we're moving toward braided lines as a straight through, and the technology has improved enormously. So we're looking at these new 0.2s, we're looking at about 15 pounds. Which is the realm of a really good PE 0.6. So there's a lot happening in the world of braid. And I mean, if hypothetically, if we don't have to use a leader, if we just have to tie it onto a hook or onto a clip, apart from making things incredibly simple, these diameters are so small that I certainly don't know if they throw a shadow that's perceivable to a brim. It appears not to, because a lot of the trial and error we've done, we've certainly had a rod set up with copolymer, a rod set up with braid. We've given them even time. Now, if that had worked out as a 50-50 and we got the same amount of strikes but had the huge benefit of the extra power of braid, that would have been my wildest dreams come true. That would have been fantastic. Mm. That's not how it's been. How it's been is that these skinny braided leaders at 0.3, absolutely smoking copolymer, and I've done nothing but talk about copolymer for probably at least 5 years and put I don't know how many fishermen onto it, but enough to keep my phone in messages from probably 7 o'clock at night till midnight, probably 5 or 6 nights a week, and just talking people through that that change, or if you like, from going to a different material, allaying their fears, giving them some confidence to have a crack at it, talking about brands, which ones to get, the cheap ones, the dear ones, whatever. And now I sort of feel that I might have let some of those people down to a degree, because they're just getting into copolymer and now we've sort of moved on to another material altogether. So, yeah, things have got interesting very, very quickly. But, yeah, the results, trialing them against each other, have been mind-blowing, no doubt.
Hmm. Let's just explore this, the braided leaders a little bit, because, I mean, I've never fished braids straight through. I remember when braids first came out, Spiderwire was just, it was the new kid on the block, you know, and I remember people talking about tying them straight through, and these were bait fishers that were using braid and were going straight through to the hook with braid and finding that they were getting similar results to whether they used a leader or not, whether they just shot the braid straight through. And that kind of, that was very early in the days when Spiderwire was just coming out, and since then I don't think I've heard anybody doing that. You're talking about a different material again, though, that it's thinner, it's stronger, it's now clear as well. What about abrasion resistance, mate? Because, of course, that's always been one of the things about braid is, you know, you get a decent fish on that braid, it's so thin, it's so taut, it touches an oyster or it touches something sharp, ping, it's gone. How does the leader material cope in terms of abrasion and, you know, touching sharp edges and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, great question. Great question for sure. Let's say you've got a 3-pound fluoro on at 0.151. So that would be a good generic, great 3-pound fluoro, like something from FAML. When science looks at this under a microscope, they can come up with different amounts of abrasion resistance compared to other lines. So I definitely understand that. As far as braid goes, if it's tight and it's very thin and it touches something, its abrasion resistance is likely less, and likely considerably less. But if you've got 8 or 10 pound leader on at 0.09 of a mil, and a brim can still stitch you up, your problem.
Mm.
Straight up, your problem. You should be able to hold a brim out of cover with that much power. You can brutalize a brim on 8 or 10 pound. You should be losing virtually nothing. I mean, you can, on our long rods, I'm going to float a 3.5 pound brim under 10 seconds with that much strength. So abrasion resistance, I think, is an issue, but fish have to get you into cover first. So as fishermen, if we can negate that, then abrasion resistance isn't part of the equation, really.
Yep, okay. So the short answer is basically, because you've got that extra strength, you don't have to give them anything. You can lock up and just muscle them out of there so that they don't get a chance to actually cause the line to touch anything.
Yeah, brutalise them, get them up to the surface where they lose traction, brim hate being on the surface, get them up out of their comfort zones, disorientate them up there. You've really got to make a mistake once you get a brim to the surface for him to get down again if you've got the power. So it might not be a way a lot of people want to fight a brim, but in certain situations, if you don't fight a brim that way, you're kissing by a lure, you're kissing by some heartbreak, and we honestly don't know whereabouts in that fish's mouth that lure is. Has it closed its mouth? Are all 6 hooks in its mouth? This what would I call it? There's an area within fishing that would suggest you can try the softly approach. You win some, you lose some. I personally certainly have difficulties with that, but these are fish that we chase, that we love, that we release, that we look after with kindness and tenderness in live wells, swapping between live wells and a couple of photos and back to live wells. The thought of that fish on a light leader with his mouth pin closed that he might not get rid of and that might well kill him, I have difficulty with that. I'd much rather have what some people might consider a not a particularly good sporting chance perhaps for the brim, but in saying that, really knuckling brim on purpose-built gear is absolutely exhilarating because you're on red line the whole time and takes practice and experience and it's tough. I mean, they can pull really, really hard on the right gear and it's about as exhilarating as brim fishing gets, I think. I mean, you can have a brim run, a big brim might run 30 or 40 metres over a flat, but you're never going to lose it on red line. That stuff is really exciting and it's a different way to fight fish. It's a different philosophy to a degree, but gee, it's a lot of fun.
Mm. And what about other species, mate? I mean, brim's obviously, that's your bag, brim and trout, but up north here, what are the applications for braided leaders up here? Do you reckon we could, you know, bag barramundi and mangrove jack and there's some of those reef species on them, or are we playing with fire and, you know, with those species that love the heavy cover and the sharp corals and that sort of stuff?
You're not going to like the answer, but you're asking me to speculate on something I know absolutely nothing about in regards to diameters and will braids of thicker diameters be able to cope with those fish in those territories? Will they take it? Will they not take it? I can only speak for the things that I've used it on. Or the area that I've used it on, which is down here, and everything in the estuary has this stuff. I mean, it's not like fish like salmon. I mean, you could be throwing jug cord at those and they're still going to eat it.
Yep.
But flathead, trout, brim, bluedrick, toadfish, mullet, chub mullet, everything that this stuff goes at. I mean, if we get back to brim as the best analogy in regards to a species that's hypervigilant on leaders at times, then if it's knocking brim over in numbers that I'm still struggling to get my head around, then I don't think other species are going to be an issue because I don't think they're as hypervigilant in regard to leaders and the vibration caused by leaders, the shadow caused by leaders, etc.
All right. Well, I'm going to stick my hand up, mate, to have a bit of a play with this stuff around the mangroves and see whether the jacks can be extracted. I mean, the reason I asked the question, of course, is that in this part of the world, apart from the fact that, you know, we've got those sharp structures and we've got those tough fish, we've also got strong currents and we've got deeper water and that kind of stuff as well, where sometimes, you know, to be able to go to a thinner, not just a thinner leader, but a thinner line with a, if you were to go all the way through with it, could have some major advantages in terms of getting your lure down deeper, or if you're doing a bit of jigging, getting it down vertically or in amongst the structure, getting it right in deep, being able to cast that bit easier, because obviously the thinner and lighter the line is for its strength, the more options you've got in those areas.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. And there's certainly a lot of your major Queensland estuaries and your Northern Territory estuaries, you're looking at that coffee water at times. I'm not suggesting that you'd go and throw 50-pound braid at jungle perch in crystal clear water, but in many of the scenarios that would embrace what you've just said, I can't see the reason why you couldn't use it. And as you said, in current, getting lures down, having those much finer diameters, it kind of just makes sense. I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I said to them, I kind of feel embarrassed that it's actually taken me this long to wrap my head around it and actually do it, because it almost defies logic that for me personally, I just feel that I've been so basic and probably so brainwashed that I haven't had a crack at this earlier. And as someone who was brought up in the 70s with, for those that are a little bit younger, in the 70s, mono came out and they started to play with colours. So we had luminous type greens and yellows and blues, reds, pinks, and there was no such thing as leaders. There was no such thing as fluoro. We tied our leaders our lures. So we tied our lures on the end and we caught fish in the same quantities probably as we do today. Some fisheries are actually better today. Some fisheries are worse today. But the point being that we didn't at that point even consider fish the site in regards to those really visible monos. We were using those because we could see them and we had a better idea where our presentations were. But that was a really crucial point for me, I suppose, because I'd gone through that era and I'd seen it. So at this point, we haven't tied on bright orange leader or a bright pink leader, but I think at the right diameters, they'll be fine. But please let that be moderated by the fact that we haven't tried it. So I'm not going to say for a second that it will work, but the ones that we are using are working. And with the clear stuff coming that's incredibly strong, I can't see another reason that manufacturers are going to go there unless they're looking at a straight-through line. I don't think they're going to be offering that up as a leader to tie onto another bait leader, because I'm the only person that I know that's stupid enough to have tried that. So it looks like a straight-through revolution in braid might be coming. That's only a hypothetical, but if it's the scenario of walks like a duck, squawks like a duck, then it's a duck and that's where they're going. They're going to straight through.
Yep. And, of course, up north here, as you say, the water's not typically in the estuaries, at least. The water's not as clear as it is in Tassie. So most of our species are not particularly leader shy. What it comes down to is being able to get the lures down to them when there's a current. But it also comes down to abrasion resistance, of course, because the old barra, or even the threadfin, you know, they've got rough mouths and they can rub through a fairly thin leader fairly quickly. So it's going to take a little bit of experimentation, I think, to see. But I'm willing to give it a go, mate. Somebody's got to give it a go. So I think it sounds like there might be some options there that need to be explored. So, and in the right circumstances, maybe it'll work. Mate, let's have a talk about how you use this stuff. So in terms of knots, you're tying braid to braid, your leader to mainline knot. What knot are you using there?
Okay, so when it comes to knots, I know a lot of people hyper-vigilant or hyper-obsessed with their FGs. I'm not sure that that's even an option on braid because I can't see the braid digging into the braid, so to speak. It's just not going to make sense. I personally don't use the FG anyway. If you look at all the criteria there is within a knot, so breaking strain is a considerable part of it, but ease of tying is also a considerable part of it. So the twisted leader knot, which was first published by Jeff Wilson in one of his book editions, it doesn't seem to be there now. He's a gentleman that I first met when I was sort of 15, actually, through a sport fishing club. Just such a gentleman and such a legend. So he had the twisted leader knot, and in that particular book, this is pre-FG, and he said, this is the strongest leader connection that I know. The twisted leader knot is a surgeon's knot, really, if that's the way you want to look at it. Let me get this part right in regards to which part you're at. You oppose your main line and your leader, and you wrap your leader 30, 40 wraps around your main line. You simply form a loop, pull both lines through. So that would be considered one pass. So on conventional leader at about 0.180, I'd be looking at three passes. At 150, five passes, and on the braid, we're doing eight passes, and there are no issues at all with the braid-to-braid connection. That's not the issue, actually. That's the part that was really, really easy, because this is a great knot. It's extremely small. It's certainly nowhere near as long as an FG, and, I mean, a lot of the long rods that we build, and I think without wanting to give ourselves a plug, the fact that our long rods have got give is possibly a significant part of being able to fish brittle lines like braid. I don't think we can just totally discount that, because I'm not sure that would be factual to do that.
Mm.
So twisted leader knot compared to an FG, I know that there's a lot of people that can tie an FG very quickly and it's very easy, but there's plenty of people that have issues with it. Twisted leader knot comes in at 1 or 2% under. So it's very, very similar.
Yep.
As the video I see, I don't see many people redlining their gear anyway. And this this is a knot you can tie in the dark, really. It's that absolutely incredibly simple. So that takes care of the braid to braid. And the breakages we get, if we're snagged or something like that, it's very rare that it's the leader knot that goes. It's the knot to the terminal that goes. And the knot to the terminal is the big problem.
And what are you using there?
Well, I probably started with the thinnest, slipperiest PE 0.3 on the market. And I'd suggest that that was a blessing in disguise, because if we hadn't done that, we would have been tying fairly basic knots and they would have been holding based on, especially on four strands, because, I mean, there's some terrific four strands out there. They're a little bit coarser and the knotting procedure is all pretty simple, but I didn't start on that. I started on stuff that is basically a piece of silk with lube on it, for want of a better description. So a 30 twist blood knot pulled. Doesn't pull at home when it's dry, but it pulls when it gets wet with the fish on. A triple polymer pull. Now try and wrap that around your brain when the line actually has to go around the hook. It's not a knot on top of the hook. I mean, part of that is the hook going through the loop of the knot. So
okay.
That at home, I tied it. Yep, no worries. Caught a couple of fish and it pulled. And that was very unexpected. So once again, I came back to the great man himself, the legend himself in Jeff Wilson, and started looking at his book and sort of bastardized a cat's paw. So we're doubling the line, putting it through the eye of the clip. That's if your clip has an eye. So your decoy spiral clips. I don't ever want to be telling people what their opinions are, but for me, it's the best clip on the market. It's a figure of eight. It's got an eye. So I think clips with eyes and the loop part of the clip with no moving parts, the loop part of the clip is a extraordinarily light metal loop. So you can take any loop knot that you want to tie out of the equation, and none of them are going to be as strong as tying a knot to an eye on a clip. So the decoy ones, I think I wrote them up for the first time in freshwater fishing in, I don't know, 2014 or something like that. And I've been using them for a while then, and I've never stopped. The best lightweight clip that I've used. So if you double your line by 6 or 7 inches, and then you put that through the eye, you fold that back and you have a loop. On one side of the loop, you'll have your tag, and on the other side of the loop, you'll have your main line. You can grab those together, and then you've got tight line on both sides of the loop and a tight loop. And then just to whiz the clip around, 8 turns is sufficient on a braid that isn't ultra slippery, but on the one we've been using, we've had to go to a 12-turn cat's paw, which the first time you tie it, you might want to hit your head into a best block wall a couple of times. But after you've done it 20 or 30 times, it does become a very, very easy knot. The other thing really interesting with braid is when you're pulling a knot like that up, when you're cinching it up, on nylon lines or nylon-type lines like fluoro, mono, copolymer, if you were to pull it up on those lines, you would burn them. But the great thing about braid is it doesn't burn. So you can have a little bit of a mess and you can pull it up, you can grab the tag in your teeth, you can pull all the mess out of it, get it tight. It's very, very small. And I'd challenge people to put considerable stress on sort of that 7 to 9 pound super skinny braid. You'll have trouble breaking that as it is. And when you see the tolerance in regards to strain that you can put on that, you're going to go fish that and just go, wow, this is an advantage that I've never had before with tolerances way thicker than this. This is something that's not going to break.
Mm. I'd have to say, though, mate, you probably want to back off a little bit on the single malts where you're tying what essentially is, you know, spider silk, you know, cobwebs and tying knots on them. You'd want to have your wits about you and your eyes open, wouldn't you?
Yes, you probably would. But the really interesting thing, and I won't name this particular friend of mine, and he'll listen to this and he'll know it's about him, but I think he embraces a great deal of fishermen and some really good fishermen as well within our industry. He's fishing a number of outfits that have been in the $2,000 range, and this kid can fish. He's a good broom fisherman, and he's got maybe three knots up his sleeve.
Yep.
In fishing terms, they're called one percenters. They're not one percenters, Greg. They're way, way more important than that. If you're toting $2,000 of gear up the river or in your boat or somewhere else, you really owe it to yourself to maybe, you know, sit down in your lounge room like I do and like I'd suggest other folks do, and you've got to tie the knot 20 times before you're confident enough to tie it on the water. You've got to stress test it. It's very, very easy to stress test things on electronic scales that we weigh our fish on.
Yep.
We've just got to learn the knots that are applicable. And at the end of the day, a knot's a knot. I mean, you can tie a bimini in 30-pound braid, and it's one of the easiest things you'll ever do compared to mono or fluoro or a nylon line that's springy. I mean, tough knots in braid tend to be very easy to tie because you're not dealing with the tolerances that happen. The tolerances might be the right word, but the issues involved with lines that stretch.
Yep.
So with braid, very little to no stretch, obviously, and we just have to learn those knots. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to fish it. So if you want the advantages, spend half an hour on the internet, tie the knot half a dozen times or 20 times until you're comfortable with it, and then go use it and take the great advantages that come with tiny little bits of extra skill that you've achieved by, if you're looking at going to those materials, then learn how to use them. Not just how to angle them, but learn how to use them technically to the utmost of their abilities.
Yeah. As you say, it's not even a 1%er. And if you're going to the extent of having that top-notch gear and you want to get maximum advantage out of it, then you've got to use everything that's available to you. There's no point, you know, buying a Ferrari and then putting golden Commodore tyres on it. You know, you're not getting full use out of the Ferrari. So same thing when you're using that high-end tack on, I think it's a good example of, you know, one of those things that probably a lot of people don't think about is you're going that extra little bit with the leaders. Everyone just goes straight for the fluorocarbon. Mate, we've been talking for a little while. I'm going to start to wrap this up now. But I guess what I'd like to do to finish off is maybe get some thoughts about it. And I hope we haven't talked about this beforehand, so feel free to tell me to bugger off. But in terms of brands and that kind of stuff, have you got any suggestions for those who are interested in perhaps giving the fluorocarbon leaders a bit of a try? Where can we find them? What brands are out there? What recommendations can you leave us with to round this interview out?
Which leaders did you ask me to suggest on them, Greg?
Did I say fluorocarb? Because I meant braided leaders.
Okay. In regards to leaders, I'm talking to your mate Rudy at the moment and my mate Rudy. Well, I'll call him my mate and you can say that he's not your mate.
No, he doesn't have any mates. He'll be listening to this, so I can tell you he's got no mate.
We're just pursuing our options in regards to what we do next, because some people in the industry think that this thing really has legs. So I haven't come out and named the particular camo leader, the dull camo leader at 0.3 that I've been talking about. I've already given you or anybody that can research enough information to sort that for themselves.
Go and find it, yep.
Sometimes in fishing, we all have to do a little bit of work. Sometimes it can't always be laid out on a platter. And in this particular situation, we just want to run it past the company and see what they think. But what I can say is that the overall trend with the big, massive multinational, gee, I said fluoro myself, and the massive multinational, so you've infected my brain with this stuff.
You can't blame me, mate. It's that single malt we've been talking about all night. You're distracted.
Oh, well, I'm distracted because the glass is empty, but I can sort that shortly enough. So if you look at your really big braids in regards to brands, and a lot of those are very difficult to find in Australia or you just can't get them here. So if I was to put out Goosen, so the Goosen Cast 4, in a four strand is one of my favourite main lines. It's inexpensive and it's a cracker. Goosen, Varivis, YGK, Toro, that'd cover four enormous line manufacturers that aren't really tackle majors. If you'd like, I have got, or I am using the new Dialer Emeraldus 8-strand, and that's what I was using yesterday. I picked up a 60-plus trout on that, and that was straight through braid. And that's a very, very visible braid, in certainly in salt water, because it's a blue grain. But at 0.5, I think we're looking at, what's the diameter on a 0.5? About 1.2. So it's still, you know, the most of your 2-pound fluoros. I think there's just a point of skinniness, bearing in mind that water may not be the greatest conduit for site. All these things that attract people to science, because the science rather relates to people, but doesn't necessarily relate to the fish in the water. We know a lot about fish diet, but we don't know a whole lot about water being the conduit. So,
correct.
I'd call that a pretty highly visible braid. But at what tolerance does a braid stop throwing a discernible shadow for a fish? At what point does a material that doesn't stretch versus a material that does stretch? Where are the vibration issues here for the fish in regards to getting very, very close to that presentation and perhaps picking up issues with vibration on their lateral line? Well, there's a massive difference between, say, a great 4-pound fluoro like Rock FC at 0.165, and also a material that has some flexibility. You pull it through the water, it stretches, water has to go around it, there has to be vibration there. When fish get very close to that, and they do have to be very, very close to it before they're going to see that, but that's often the time that the fish are going to turn away. And then halve that material, and with a material that isn't going to stretch, we're looking at such fine tolerances. How much water is displaced? How much pickup outside of sight is going to blow a fish off before he takes your presentation, or as he takes it and may reject it? So these are all the things that we're looking at the moment. And it's pretty new to us too. Did I think that this would be anything close to what it is? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And if I didn't say earlier, I'm not suggesting for one second that I'm going to not use leaders. And I'm not suggesting to other people that they stop using leaders. Leaders will always be a part of fishing with braid. And in regards to fluoro as well, it's been a great line for a lot of people. Copolymer's been great. But there is an evolution within most processes. There's an evolution within most sports. You know, footy's changed from the 70s to the 80s and the 90s. Fishing's changing. Every part of what we do changes when technology gets better and better and better. What it probably comes down to is whereabouts do we sit on the techno train in regards to what we're going to accept and what we're going to move forward with.
No, I think that's a really, really good point. And, you know, there's never a one-size-fits-all. So, you know, what we're talking about here, there may be applications where mono is still the best option. There may be applications where fluoro is a better option. But, yeah, definitely what you're talking about here, you're getting out there experimenting, you're at the cutting edge, you're doing things that people haven't really done before, and you're getting results. Well, that's how we move forward. As materials and as the equipment and as the tackle improves and new stuff comes out, people go out and try it. But unfortunately, as you say, a lot of us become habitualized or become a bit, we do things without thinking. And so it's natural that for many of us now, we reach for the fluorocarbon. I'm certainly going to think a little bit more about my leaders moving forward. You've certainly opened my mind and opened my eyes, and I'm keen to experiment a little bit. So Scott O'James, it's been brilliant talking to you, mate. Really appreciate you coming along. Really appreciate that you've been sitting out in your veranda now for an hour in the freezing cold, that your single malt glass is completely empty. And I reckon it's time that we wrap this up, mate. And thank you so much for your time, and bid you farewell so that you can go and fill your glass up and go back inside and sit in front of the fire, mate.
Thank you very much for having me on, Greg, and a pleasure, as always, speaking to you, my friend.
It's been absolute pleasure having you here, mate. And for all those who are listening in, I hope that you've gotten something out of this. Yeah, got you thinking a little bit. Maybe it's not the way you're going to go, but have a think about what you're doing. Have a think about the tackle you're using. Have a think about how you can use it better, how you can get that little bit extra out of your gear maybe something as simple as changing your views on what leader you use. If that's the case, then hopefully this conversation has helped you along the way. So once again, Scotto, thank you so much, and we'll bid you farewell. Good night, and thank you, everybody, for coming along and having a listen.
Yeah, and enjoy your filthy hot night at 25 degrees in Cairns too, mate.
I will, mate. I'll have a cold drink or whatever. Yeah, won't have a single malt. I'll have a beer.
All right, mate. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. Thank you for that.
Bye-bye.